Boker Tov World. Today's daf in Masechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Memhei, but we're holding at that Halakha Mishnah on the bottom of Mem Dalet Amud Beit. Haya rachok mi beit haskila arba amot. So what we've been doing here is we've been following the defendant, together with those who are bringing him out to the Beit HaSkila. And we talked about his saying vidui, and now we're continuing to walk towards the execution spot. When he was four amot away, mafshitinot et bigadav, they would remove his clothing. That was in order. Well, we're going to see, we already saw really the remez. We'll talk about it again in the Gemara, that when it says oto, it means he, and not his protection, not things that he's wearing. In fact, the question over here is going to be nogea, whether a mita yafa, a choice of the best possible conditions for us to be mekayem this mitzvah of execution, that he should die as rapidly as possible in a way that he would want. We'll talk about this. So ha'ish b'chasinato melefanav, they would put a little piece of material in front of a male's genitals. V'ha'isha melefanav u'me'achareha. A woman would be covered both in front and back. So says Divrei Reb Yehuda. The Chachamim omrim, whereas the Chachamim say, only a male is niskal oron, so we only remove this clothing from a male, but eina isha niskelet aruma. So we'll see in the Gemara what the basis of this machlokes between Reb Yehuda and the Chachamim is. Tana Rabbana. A'ish b'chasin oto perek echad milafanav, so we take a small piece of material covering a male's genitals in front. A woman, we use two small pieces of material. We cover her front and back. So it says, Rabbi Yudani explains why. A woman, because of the fact that she actually does not have genitals in front. She really has genitals that can be seen actually front and back. So she's entirely a expression of nakedness, and therefore it's inappropriate to have her naked. Whereas the Chachomim say, only a male is niskal aron, and a female is not niskalet aroma at all. Why is this? Because, since it says in the Pasuk, viragmu oto. So oto, remember, that in Lashon HaKodesh, we always have an option of including the object of the verb in the verb. And that's the most effective way of saying it. So it should say, urgamuhu, that we should stone him. Instead, it separates the object from the verb in order for us to be able to see that object right there in front of us as a unique thing. In which case, the fact that it says oto teaches us something. Now, what does it teach us? Him. Does it mean him and not her? Ilama oto velo ota. And that we don't actually sokel. We're not stoning women. Is that the point? That's not true, though. Because zaktiv vahotse ta et aisha hu o et aisha ayi. It says beferish. Either that man or that woman. So it can't mean oto. Only him. Elamai oto. Oto velo ksuto. We learn from that word that it means the object, literally, and the object is his body. But that means his body and not his clothing. But it also implies, oto, since it uses the gender for a male, it means, and this is only true of oto. Oto beloksuto, haota biksuta. So that would also imply, in other words, we're using two different meanings to this word. So oto means him and not her. In what sense? In the sense that it's only him whose body is isolated from his clothing. That's the point. Now, what are these life forms that are appearing on the screen? Strange life forms indeed. Are they Barnea life forms? Yeah, they seem to be. Welcome, Barney. It's a much better look than that bloody piece that you showed us a minute ago. Phew. I thought you were trying to illustrate how people look after they're stoned. Reb Yehuda Omer. Reb Yehuda says we only learn one thing from here, and that is oto means bevok suto. We don't take that word to also mean only a male, because why would it? Basically, we always use a gender that is actually not committal when we speak about either male or female. So it's true, if it would have stressed oto in an additional way, I would have learned out two things. But as is, it just means what it's saying. Oto belok suto, as we saw earlier, vo'tzeta ta'isha u'ta'isha hi. And this is a very important nekuda, because remember that elsewhere the Gemara tells us, we had this back in, also we discussed in Bava Kama, hishva ha'katuv isha le'ish l'chol nitot shebatorah. I believe that that was a Gavi rule at the time, but you might want to repeat it. So Hishva Katuv Ishalish L'chomi Tot Sheba Torah means that the Torah has given us equal treatment, male or female, and therefore, why would we think that this Oto is changing that general rule? Now, does this really boil down to the question? I mean, it sounds like a little issue of prudity, doesn't it? Like, you know, the Chachomim say, you don't want to strip a woman naked. And Reb Yehuda says, well, we don't care. I mean, is that really what the Machlokas is? That Lameima Derabbana Chayshi Lehurura v'Reb Yehuda Lo Chayshi Lehurura? So does that mean that the Rabbanan feel that it's inappropriate to expose this woman because the people that are there will actually get turned on by her? Whereas Reb Yehuda doesn't worry about such things under these conditions. Maybe that's what it's all about. But that can't be. Not that the Gemara is really entertaining this, but it wants to bring out the fact that that issue actually would lead us in the opposite direction, because we know that ha'ipcha shaminan. We know that they both hold the opposite of what you're assuming they're saying here, because remember in Sota, we learned in the Mishnah, ha'kohen ochez bivgadeha, the Kohen there takes hold of her and rips her clothing, and nikru'u, nikru'u, niframu, nifra'u, doesn't matter to what extent they tear open, and he actually uncovers her breasts, achi megaleh liba, and then he soteret sa'ara, he undoes her hair, if it was braided, whereas Reb Yehuda Omer, im haya liba na'er lo haya megaleh, if she has pretty breasts, then we don't uncover it, v'im haya sa'ara na'er, Lo yasotro, she has beautiful hair. He doesn't expose her hair. So that means that if anything like that is involved, it should be exactly the opposite. Reb Yehuda would be the one who says that we should not actually strip her, because in Sota, that's what he says, and the Rabbanan are the ones who would be saying that we should. Omar Rabba, there's a completely different issue over there. In that case of the Sota, we are not going out to execute her, for heaven's sakes. All we're trying to do is to discover whether or not she had been fooling around with this other guy. It's very likely that she's going to be walking out of the procedure having proven her innocence, right? So if that's the case, how do we ignore the fact that maybe a half an hour later, this girl's going to be walking down the street, and all of the Kohanim that were there in the Beit HaMikdash are thinking, man, if I could get my hands on her after having watched her unclothed. So that's different. Shema teitzemi beitin zaka v'yidgaruba pirchei kuna. It could be that these, you know, I mean, there's kids there, the Kohanim, teenagers, they could get easily turned on by something like that, and they'll go after her. But over here, where we're leading her to execution, there's not much chance of that. So, we're going to be executing her, and therefore they're not going to have an opportunity to go after her. Now, maybe you'll say, all right, but, you know, you're turning them on, and once you get these males turned on, they might go after anything. That's not true. Because they may actually get turned on to other people. No. We're not worried about that, because Omar Rabba, we actually have a Kabbalah, Kemiri, that Ein Yetzer Hara Sholeit Ela B'mi She'inav Ro'ot. The uncovering of a particular human being is what turns a person on. There's not a generalized sexual arousal because of one person to all people. And therefore, the specific idea is remarkably specific. Now, this is the basis of the entire pornography trade, right? Because otherwise, you've seen them one, you've seen them all. There's absolutely no difference. It's all generic. So why in the world would people bother buying their second Playboy magazine? Well, maybe nowadays that's just not even pornographic. But anyway, when I was a kid, that's what the yeshiva looked for under your mattress. But the bottom line is that this is clearly the reality. And therefore, we don't have to be concerned for a general turn-on. Okay, but that explains Rav Yehuda. It doesn't explain the Rabbanan, does it? Somebody, probably Rav Barnea, is in need of muting. Now, there's different levels of muting. You could be muted just for this. You could be turned off from punning in general, which would be a level of muting. I think that's the button to the left. But one or the other should definitely be pressed, Rav Barnea. Thank you. Thank you. I don't know who's speaking, but it wasn't clear enough to hear. As says Rava, okay, you've explained the contradiction in Rabbi Yehuda, but you didn't even touch upon the contradiction in the Rabbana. How come you're not explaining that? Hello, my Rav. Let me explain the whole story to you. You were right in the way you explained Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda, lo kasha. That we accept what Rav said. There's a difference between the sota, where the Pirkei Kahuna might get turned on to her, as opposed to a case where you're executing the woman, and therefore there's no concern of any damage afterwards. Masha Einkin, when it comes to the Rabbanan, who also contradict themselves, the Rabbanan ad Rabbanan nami lo kasha. Why did the Rabbanan say that we're not concerned about uncovering the breasts and the hair of this woman? Because the Torah says, v'nivasru kol anashim v'lo ta'asena ke'zimatchena. Now, this is a very interesting Raya, because it's not referring to a saita, but it's a metaphor to a saita, remarkably. So this is the pasuk in Yechezkel that is comparing Klal Yisrael to a sota, right? So it says that Chas V'Sholom, that Klal Yisrael will be punished, and all the other women, meaning all of the other nations that are acting in the ways that Klal Yisrael acts, they'll learn a lesson from looking at what happens to you. But meanwhile, the metaphor is so powerful that we'll use it as an actual indication of what the Torah wants to achieve, seeks to achieve, by this handling this sota in such nasty ways that it is a way to make people sensitive to how low class you make yourself with this kind of behavior. That's the point. You needn't blush so much over there, Ori. Actually, you should get your Abba to put some medication on your cheeks. That would be even better than blushing. But in any event, the idea over here is that the Torah specifically wants you to go out of your way to express the low-classedness of this behavior. So you have no choice. The Torah is telling you we want to degrade her. In the case of these skila that we're talking about in our Mishnah, I mean, really, you have to persuade people that they should not be Mechal Shabbos because they're going to be naked? I mean, come on, they're going to be killed. I mean, in terms of the whole issue, the nakedness seems to be a rather small issue. Ein lecha yisur gadol mizeh. I mean, what greater way of making a person sensitive to what's been done than the very fact that she's being niskelet? Now, I mean, what are you going to say? Okay, but, I mean, why not go all the way? V'chitema, and what's wrong if we also degrade her? So strip her too. I mean, once you're killing her, you might as well go all the way. That's not true at all. And this is a beautiful nekuda. Omer of Nachman, Omer Rabba Baravua, the mitzvah of the ahavta l'reacha kamocha. So you should love your neighbor, and it doesn't, Reacha is not a neighbor, I don't know that ridiculous English translation, but you should love your, Reacha means your lover, your friend, your fellow man. so on and so forth, all of those issues that he or she who is like you, love as yourself. That includes choosing the best way for that person to die. Would you want to be, if you have to die anyway, would you want to also be degraded and humiliated? No. So how could you do that to someone else? That means that we have to completely separate out the issues over here. That's what the Gemara is trying to point out. Insofar as we are continuing to be able to do our best for this individual, to love and protect him, we still do, even at the moment that he's being executed. So what kind of silly statement is that? Well, once you're killing her, might as well strip her. God help us. That would be a complete violation of the way in which the Besdin and the people there are supposed to be feeling about what's happening. But wait a minute, I just thought of something. Maybe that itself is the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan. In other words, maybe we're arguing about whether what Reb Nachman said is true. Do we even extend v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, to love your fellow creature as yourself, to cases like this? Or do we say that there's an abrogation of love when you're killing someone? Maybe that's the machlokas. No, that's not the machlokas. The kulei alma itlu de Rav Nachman. There's no reason to believe that anyone would disagree that ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha means, by the way, there's some who very sweetly learn that the remez ve'ahavta l'reacha is that you can actually read ve'ahavta l'ra'acha. The worst of you should still be loved. So those who are bad should be loved. Anyway, but actually everybody holds of Reb Nachman. The machlokas over here boils down to the question of what is the correct application of Reb Nachman. In other words, what would a person, Sir Richard, please still mute. What would a person himself prefer? If you're trying to figure out what can I do to make this person's execution as painless as possible. When I say painless, it doesn't necessarily mean physical pain. Painless overall. Would a person rather have a slightly higher level of suffering, a slightly prolonged death because of the fact that their body is protected by whatever they're wearing, and save himself the embarrassment of being stripped? Or would he focus at such a time only on the pain and panic and fear of death, and it wouldn't matter to him the fact that he's also stripped? He doesn't even think about that. And that would be the machlokas. So, a person still considers personal embarrassment. Bizyoni is not really embarrassment here. It means to be degraded. That is more important to him than a slight difference in the amount of his physical suffering. Therefore, caring about him and loving your fellow is actually mechayev you to make sure that he remains clothed. Or here, for the woman, I should say, she remains clothed. We're marsova, because for a male, it's not really all that embarrassing to be naked. But women are very sensitive. So marsova necha de gufa adif mibizyoni mashenkin rebuta holds that it's more important to her to suffer less than to be worried about being naked at such a moment. And now that brings us to our most beloved guiding capitan, who will now say the words that never fail. Yeah, he's saying them all right, and he's moving his lips. And we can actually hear him in our minds, but we'd like to hear him in our ears. What better way to start a morning? You'd think it would even be better than porridge, wouldn't you? If it were, then we would have that beautiful picture up all the time. Beit HaSkila, now we have arrived at the actual Beit HaSkila. So, let's describe the Beit HaSkila. The Beit HaSkila, ayagavoa shtei komot. It was two stories high, but a koma is not a story. That's what's interesting. The meaning of the word koma in Hebrew is the height of a person. It's the kumata ish. So it was twice as high as a person. And therefore, we're calling it two stories high. But obviously, we don't build our buildings so that they just touch your head when you walk in. So it's a borrowed term when we talk about the number of komot in a building. So, you know, if the apartment building, which may be 40 komot high, was really only 40 komot high, it would be half the height that it is in reality. So here it means literally shtei komot. It's interesting how you get back to the basics, right? Now, echad min ha'edim dochafo al mot. Now, big, big machlokas in here about how to read this Mishnah. And Rashi reads it one, well, you can't be 100% sure how he reads it, but he seems to read it very differently than the Rambam. So according to the Rashi, this is the way the Achronim understand Rashi, and it's not 100% clear that that's what he means. Rashi has a concern about having the person fall on his back, because to actually expose his genitals in that fashion, straight on his back, is truly inappropriate. And therefore, he reads the Mishnah, if this reading is correct, he reads the Mishnah that one of the Edim pushes the person on the side of his hips so that he should fall more in the direction of his side. If he falls on his chest, then we've got a problem, because then he's not going to be killed as quickly when a stone actually falls on him. So because of that, we will flip him over, but we won't flip him completely over, because once again, we don't want him to be lying on his back. So we will be hofcho al mosnav. We'll flip him over on his hips. And if it turned out, see, now this is the way the Rambam learns. If it turned out that he died, so in other words, according to the Rambam, we're perfectly happy for him to be fallen the way we want him to fall, which is that he should fall onto his chest. We turn him to his side to see whether he's alive. Imedba, if he died from the fall, then there's nothing else that needs to be done. V'im lav, if not, so then the other aid is what it seems to be saying, the other witness, takes this stone and puts it on this person's chest, which is more likely to crush him, and then that would kill him. Imetba, if that kills him, then that's fine. And if not, so then you do an actually regimato, b'cho Yisrael, shenemar yad ha'edim tiebo b'rishon el ha'amito, v'yad kol ha'am b'achrona. Okay, so according to Rashi, it would mean, if he died, then you flip him over, because look, I mean, every dead body is buried on its back. That's the derech of kfura. Once the person is dead, then we don't have that sense of genitals. There's just a body. And in that case, we flip him over on his back. And because those genitals are no longer alive, no longer responsive, and therefore they're just dead. So according to the Rashi's approach, it would mean that in the end, we would flip him over, and indeed he would after he dies. According to the Rambam, the idea over here would be we'd put him on his side to check him out. But as far as doing the actual skila, we would do the skila. If it turns out that he's dead, he's not dead, then we would put him on his back. Okay, so now you said it was two komotai. Now remember that this guy is standing. He's not lying down on the Beit HaSkila. So when he's pushed off, we have to include an additional one story. Again, story is not the story. The real story is that the koma is his own height. So we have to include the fact that he's standing, which means that we have three komot, the two komot of the building, plus the fact that he's being thrown down standing, so that essentially it's his own height. That means three times his own height. Why in the world do we need that kind of height? Umi be'inan kulehai? Don't you remember the whole sugya in Bava Kamma? In Bava Kamma, we had to define what is considered to be a bor, that is a suitable bor to be mechayev the person who digs a bor for causing the death of an animal in that bor. So over there, we darshan, remember in the Mishnah of Veraminu, Ma bor shul kedei lahamit, namely asarat tvachim, hafko kedei lahamit asarat tvachim. So we're talking over there in the Mishnah about different types of excavations. And we said just like the standard cistern is 10 tvachim deep, and that is a shear that is actually appropriate for calling it a murder weapon, so to speak, of the animal. So that's true in all cases. Now, that means that falling from a height of 10 tvachim is sufficient to cause the death of the animal. Why in the world do we go so high to have shalosh komot? Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Bar Avuha, it was here that Rav Nachman said the pshat that we said earlier, V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, means bror lo bita yafa. You have to choose a way in which it will be easiest for him to die. And therefore, certainly, I mean, what are you going to throw a guy 10 tvachim high? So what, first you'll break his leg and then you'll break his forehead, and now that's crazy. What you need to do is to throw him from a height that is more likely to kill him on the spot. Well, if that's the case, why don't we just make it a 20-story building? No. That's something else, because the v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha means that you don't want a smashed-up body. That itself is a terrible way to treat someone. And therefore, we choose the best balance that we can find between a rapid death and one that doesn't cause him to be disfigured. Next thing that we had in the Mishnah was that one of the Edim will pick up the stone, Mashma is a particular stone that was there, and drops it on his chest. Okay. Now, what this means is that if he survives being thrown off, then we do the stoning. But where do we get the idea? Now, remember the way it's beautiful, the way the Rambam talks about it. The way the Rambam talks about it is that basically this is all relative. What difference does it make if you throw the ground on him, or you throw him to the ground? It's the same gravitational effect, and it's all the same. So throwing him to the ground is stoning him. Fine. So in other words, it only looks different. Fine. Okay. So if that's the case, a classic Rambam way of looking at things, right? So if that's the case, then the very fact that the Torah puts those two languages together is the most natural thing in the world. You know, because we would say, that, like it said, O sako yisakel, O yoro yiyare, right? So, either way, either bring the ground to him or bring him to the ground, which is what the pasuk was basically saying. So, this was exactly the thing that we had on Har Sinai. So, Tana Rabbana, all, as Gavi writes, a matter of perspective. So, minayin shebitchia. Okay, so what's your reference frame? How do we know that pushing off of something is also considered to be part of this stoning? Well, after all, the Pasuk says, Lo tigabo yad. So we came to Har Sinai. No one is to touch that mountain. Kisakol yisakel o yoro yare. Imbeima im ish lo yichia. Right? So then if that's the point, it's clearly saying yoro yare. And of course, it also means that you used skila. So, minayin shebeskila, tamid lomar osako. But what, maybe that's like you have a choice. Not that if he wouldn't die by being pushed to the ground, that then you would also do skila. Maybe that would be sort of like double jeopardy. And if he survived the fall, so then he would be free. How do you know that you would do both? Minayin shebeskila, ubitchia, tamud lomar sakol yisakel o yaro yare. Uminayin sheimet bitchia yatsa. But then maybe that means you need to do actually both. How do you know that you would be yotze if he died from the fall? Tamud lomar o yaro yare. So the o yaro yare means either or. Minayin sheaf l'dorot. Kenan, how do we know to apply these ideas that took place on Har Sinai? How do we know to apply them to the definition of skila l'dorot? Tamud lomar, soko yisakel. Yisakel, in the future, it shall be done in this way. Okay, the next thing you said was that the witness second witness goes and picks up the stone. Now, I got news for you. There ain't no way that that second witness can pick up that stone. Physically impossible. Because no tell, pick it up. I mean, man, what kind of gymnastics are we talking about over here? V'atanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer, there was an even there at the Beit HaSkila that was so heavy that it took two people to lift it. Masur shnei b'nei adam. Now, here, of course, the brisa itself makes no sense. Not la, which is, of course, a lashon yachid, he picks it up, which is the same contradiction we're asking. He picks it up and drops it on the chest of the person that had been thrown down, im meit ba yatsa. And if that kills him, nothing further needs to be done. So how do you explain the Mishnah saying that he picked it up? Excuse me, Doc, says the Gemara. What are you asking from the Braita on the Mishnah if you could ask from the Braita on itself? You say there was a stone that was too heavy to be picked up by one person, so he picks it up. So obviously we're missing something over here, right? I mean, v'latimech, tikshelach igufa. First you say, matzah shnei b'nei adam, you say it weighs more than a person can lift. And then, without a breath in between, you say, and he picks it up, and not nalibo. So, therefore, the way to understand the Braita is clearly the way to understand the Mishnah. He picks it up. That's what talks about the second aid. It means, and the second aid, because we're going to need two people to do this. So, both pick it up together. Midala lebahade chavre. Why do we say, and he drops it on the guy's chest? Because if you have two people attempting to do something in tandem, they never get it right. And they'll be slightly off. So what we do is one of the Adim just lets go, but the other one at that point pushes with additional force so that it should land on him even more powerfully. And that way it's more likely to bring his rapid demise. And then the Mishnah said, but if not, if even that doesn't kill him, then everybody else takes part in this stoning. Now, it's very interesting. There's a beautiful Rambam that explains in the Pirsha Mishnah, why is it that the Torah would say that the Edim, the witnesses themselves, are the ones that are supposed to be carrying out this din of Skila. It says, because the only ones that really know that this man has to die is the Edim. If you're telling someone else to act, they're acting on hearsay. They don't have that same sense that this person really has to die. I mean, they know he has to die legally, but they don't have a sense of its being the appropriate thing. And therefore, the Torah says, the ones who know, they're the ones who should be the ones that are able to actually carry it out. If not, so then everyone participates. But that's not true, because the Braita says, "Mi olam lo shana ba adam." It never happened ever once in history that they needed to have anyone else involved and that the guy should fail to die. It was a rapid form of execution, and it never happened. So it never happened. Did I say it happened? Mika mina David, did I say that's what to do? No. I said, in the event that, so I was giving you over a principle. You're getting a little bit too literal, my dear, by saying that I claimed that other people would be involved. You're right. Nobody was ever involved. But the legal principle is not, and we're going to see why this is precisely what we need to hear now, opening up the sugya that we're about to get into. I never suggested that it happened, but it was important to establish that anybody would be a chayef to be involved. I said, if it was necessary, it was necessary. Okay. Now, you said there was a stone there. That sounds like there is a special execution stone that is there at the Beis HaShchit, the Beis HaSkila, and that there, it's waiting for them to lift up. But that's not true. There couldn't have been a particular stone there, because the din is, as the Braita explains, Vatanya, whether we're talking about a stone that was used to stone a person with. Or we're talking about the piece of wood upon which his body was hung for a moment after Scylla. Or whether we're talking about the sword that we killed someone who was Chayiv Sayiv. Or you're talking about the sudar, which is like a long scarf, that he strangled with. All of those things were buried with him. So what do you mean there was a stone? Stone was only a one-time use. No, it doesn't mean there was a stone. That is a particular stone that has been there from Sheshes Yemei Bereshis, for heaven's sake. It means that there was a stone put there in advance. That's all that it means. So that stone, you're right, was buried. And now it's immediately replaced for the next customer. So that's what it means. After it was used and buried, another one is brought. But what are you talking about? You said that it's buried with him, but there's a braita that says beferish, it's not buried with him. I'd like to see you get out of that one. Omer of Papa, when it says it's buried with him, it means along with him. It doesn't mean in his grave. My imo betvisato. So it was in what's called the tvisa, the personal space, which means four amas. So it's within, he was buried in the ground near where he was buried. But it's absolutely true to say, eini gbarim imo, it's not literally buried with him. Now, here comes the sugya that I mentioned is going to be important as a continuation for the question of, can we in fact say that other people should be involved in the skila? Now, those of you who use Apple's screensaver, which gives you a word every day, new word. The new word is always part of the sugya, amazingly. And today's word is an interesting use of the word salvage. Now, salvage means what people think is, you know, you send divers down, you bring out the treasure from a ship or that type of thing, right? But salvage has another meaning. It also means if somebody has to be killed in court, then you salvage him. If he's escaping, you can shoot him also. And he doesn't only get killed by the electric chair or by whatever it is. That's the sugya that we're about to speak about. Now, that depends on how we understand the pasuk. When a pasuk tells us what to do, is it illustrative? Or is it specific? That's the question. So, said Shmuel, look, the pasuk says exactly what it means. And therefore, if these edim end up having their hands cut off in an accident, or if the family is smart enough to cut off the witness's hands, then you can't execute the guy because it says yada edim. You don't have yada edim, right? So, the be'ina yada edim tiyebo berishona. You're not able to be Mekayim that, and so you'll have to let the guy free. What? So what are you saying? You're saying that witnesses who don't have hands, they're gidmim, they're not kosher witnesses, because, I mean, there's no way that they can ever actually go ahead and be Mekayim the Pasuk. So, I mean, why do we say over here, if the hands of the Edim were cut off, you should just say, Edim gidmim? If they started off as gidmim, we wouldn't accept it as edus. Why talk about a case where someone cut off their hands afterward? No, that wouldn't be a problem. Actually, that would be different. Shiny awesome. The meaning over here of yada edim is the yad of the edim that was there. Yada edim that was there all along is what needs to carry it out. I mean, if whatever they had was not a yad, so then there's nothing that the pasuk is referring to. Meitve. The Mishnah says, kol makom shiyidu shnayim, v'yomru me'inim anu b'yishploni shenigma dino b'beitin ploni, wherever we have two witnesses that come along and say, we testify that this fellow is an escapee. He was found to be chayiv misa in a different country with such and such a bezdin, but these dayanim. So then the bezdin that they are testifying to have him killed. Hareza Yehareg. Now, these are not the witnesses that had appeared in that original Besdin. And nonetheless, we are able to execute him. So how could Shmuel say that it has to be in the hands of the original Edim if a Beferish, a Mishnah, and Marcus says otherwise? Shmuel says, well, no, this Mishnah is talking about where it was the same witnesses. Of course, this will strike you as being nuts. How can it be if they said, and so-and-so and so-and-so were the witnesses, how could they be referring to themselves? I mean, they would just say, we witnessed it. That doesn't make sense. So there's brilliant approaches to this question, which is a little bit complex, but basically the way the Achronim explain it is that it's clear that there are cases where we are makbid from the pasuk that it's Yad HaEdim, and other cases where it doesn't say Yad HaEdim. Instead, it says Mot Yumat, no matter what. Fine. So what we're looking for is not an explanation of this particular case. We're asking about the case of the murderer, where over there it says Beferish, Yad HaEdim. So in that case, Shmuel, the way to understand the Mishnah and Marcus, that then they would say that they are the witnesses. Doesn't mean that that's the only case where they would actually execute the person as a salvage. Fine. Okay. But what it is that Shmuel seems to be saying is that psukim are meant literally, and they're not meant as illustrations of the idea. So when it says, I mean, it sounds a little hyper-literal, doesn't it? The pasuk says the hands of the witnesses shall be the first. So if the witnesses don't have hands, then you don't kill them. I mean, that's hyperliteralism. Why in the world would you go? I mean, you might as well say God has hands because it says Yad Hashem Hayot. Well, that's crazy. So where does Shmuel get the idea that we're supposed to take a pasuk as being really precisely as written? Now that idea is called the pasuk as written. That's the way the Gemara expresses the din, the word literal. Literal is kidichtiv, as it is written. But the Braita says, since it says mot yumat, where we're talking about over there, mot yumat avrot seach, so it says, o be'eva hikahu biyadovi amot, Mot yumat hamakeh rotseyachu. So in the case of a rotseyach, I know beferish that it is meant to be salvaged. Ein li ela b'mita k'tuvabo. So then I would have thought that it actually means what it says, only by going ahead and using this sayef and beheading him. How do you know that if the guy suddenly jumps into a James Bond motorboat and he's zooming away, escaping, that we take a machine gun and shoot him? So how do we know that we would actually shoot him? Tamud lomar, mot yumat, make sure that the guy dies, mikol makom. However you're able to get him, get him. So apparently we do not take a pasuk as meaning precisely. Yes, I told you before, there are cases where it's meant precisely and cases where it's not meant precisely. So in the case where the Torah is marba, like the case of the rotseach, there I know there's an extra pasuk, shani atam de amakra mot yumat. Well, hold on. If the pasuk has indicated to you that despite the fact that there was a specific way that the Torah had said that he's supposed to be killed, then nonetheless, it doesn't mean to be taken literally. That's what it's telling you. Why don't you use that as a model for the overall idea? When the Torah says, this is what to do, Yizchayev Misa, Skila, Yizchayev Sreifa, whatever, there's a general concept of salvage, mot yumat. If necessary, do what you gotta do. So, I mean, that would mean that Shmuel is wrong and that psukim are actually just illustrative. And therefore, ligmar mine, we should use this as a general rule that when the pasuk says something, it doesn't mean to be literal. Ah, says the Gemara, you're right. The only reason that we don't use it as a model is because we have two instances of this model. And remember the principle, where you have shnei ketuvim ba'im ke'echad, ein olamdim. If the Torah meant for you to use something as a model, then it would never have repeated exactly the same din, which could have been learned out from the model, in a different location. If we find that there are two places where the same principle is given over, it's obviously not a principle, and it's a specific, a din in this specific case. So there are other cases where the Torah gives such a, what you believe is a model, a goel hadam. So a rotzeach and a goel hadam are telling me the same thing, and therefore the shnei ketuvim ba'im ke'echad, the rule is that kol shnei ketuvim ba'im ke'echad, ein melamtim. Nemrod se'ach, we know what we're talking about here. Where is the example of a goel adam that the Torah says you don't have to actually be literal about the pasuk? Can you tell me what that case was?
Sure.
Here's the bright. The Torah says in a case where somebody murdered by accident, it says there that he's supposed to go galut. Now, if he leaves the city of the galut, and he's no longer in the Ir Miklat, so we have a general din over there, goel hadam yamit et haratzeach. So the one who is the goel hadam, or if he did it on purpose, then the goel hadam is supposed to kill him, goel hadam yamit et haratzeach. That means mitzvah b'goel hadam. Now, what if there is no goel hadam? What if there's no one in the family that is capable of killing this guy? So, minayin she'im ein lo goel, how do you know that without a goel adam, that Beit Din appoints a court-appointed goel adam? We hereby dub thee the blood avenger. I mean, he's not a blood avenger. He's just a professional murderer. Yeah, okay, but we dubbed him a blood avenger. So that means that we don't need a real goel adam. How do we know? Because the Torah adds the word bipigobo when he meets up with this guy. That guy's dead, which means mikomakom, whatever, whoever's going to get him and shoot him, that's sufficient. Now, this is a big machlokas because Rashi takes this, mamish kipshuto. Beis Din appoints a person and says, we dub thee goel adam. The problem is that we paskin that you cannot actually have anybody else kill a person who just wandered out of his Ir Miklat except a goel adam, a real goel adam. And the Rambam actually, because of this apparently, understands that what it says over here, minayin she'en lo goel adam she'beis Din ma'amidim lo goel, what that means is that the Beis Din executes him. That's the point. And it's not that we'll have somebody chasing him in the case of the Yairik B'Shegeg. Okay, but that's a machlokas there. But that would mean that the way Rashi's learning is against the way we paskin, because we paskin anybody else who kills a person who wanders out of his Ir Miklat would be chayiv misa for killing him. Obviously, Rashi understands that to mean except if he is a goel adam or equivalent. So equivalent would mean even the Beis Din appointed him. Anyway, so therefore we can't have two models. I don't understand why we're discussing whether Shmuel is right or wrong. It's a beferish mishnah. Umilo beinan krakedichtiv. Are you telling me that somebody believes that psukim are not meant to be understood literally? What about the crazy mission that we have later on about Ben Sorer Umore, right? So it says over there, craziest thing. This we're talking about this teenager who is now on his way into a world of drug addiction, crime, murder, and so on, right? So the Torah says, save this child, save this poor boy, and knock him off now while there's time. Okay, so that's a very new halacha, Ben Sorer Umoret. He's only a teenager. But the Mishnah says, in that case, suppose one of his parents didn't have a hand, or suppose one of his parents was unable to speak, he was mute, or suppose he was unable to walk, he's lame, or he was blind, or he was deaf. There's no way to make that boy a Ben Sorer Umoret. What? Yes? This is all in the Mishnah, because, after all, It says in the pasuk, "V'tofsu bo," it says his parents shall grab him, hold him. Well, what if they don't have hands? They can't grab him, can they? So therefore, he can't be a ben sora anymore. And then it says, "V'tofsu bo v'hotziu oto." They take him out to the Bezim. How can they take him out if they can't walk? So therefore, they can't be lame. V'lo chigrin. And then it says, and they say to the court, if they have a problem in talking, and one of them is actually mute, he's an ilim, or she's an ilim, then we can't make him a child. And then they say, Benenu ze, this boy. Well, they can't say this boy if they're blind, because how do they see this boy? So, obviously, if they're blind, then he cannot be a ben sora amara. And then they say, Enenu shomea bikolenu, he never listens to what we tell him, which means that they hear him say, drop that, will ya? Anyway, so that means that they have to hear, and if they don't hear, v'lo charashin, so they can't be deaf. that's ridiculous. The Torah literally means they should grab him, so they need hands. They should walk him, so they need feet. They should say these exact words. They need the ability to speak. So what is that saying to you, the Mishnah? The Mishnah is saying that a pasuk is meant to be literal. Lav mishum to be in a crooked echtiv. How can you get a clearer indication that Shmuel is 100% correct in insisting that we take the words literally? This Mishnah takes every last nuance literally. No, says the Gemara, that's different. Shiny Hussam, that's an absolutely unique case, the case of the Ben Sora Remora. The entire pasuk is a joke. Understand, there's a nature of this new idea that a person is nidon al shem sofo, that when we see very clearly that there is a path in life that is going to destroy this child, save him by killing him. Now, as the Gemara says elsewhere, that never ever happened in history, right? According to Maman Yom. So this whole pasuk is something of a joke. His parents shall grab him, bring him to court, have him killed. Come on. Just tell me what the din is. Give me over the din. That a ben sora amara is chayev. Really, his parents are actually going to drag him into court. His parents are the one who are going to have him killed. And they're going to say these exact words. And that's silly. The pasuk never gives us all of this nonsensical detail instead of telling us a din. What are you telling us? Stories. That's the whole point. The entire pasuk is an unnecessary narrative that's all very nice if you're writing a storybook, but have nothing to do with a legal principle. Therefore, kule kra yeterahu, the whole pasuk is shouting to you, this ain't for real. This is meant to be additives of elements that are never going to happen to make it very clear that we're talking about a principle and not something that is going to be taking place. Okay, that's why we come out with all of that crazy stuff. But normally, we would never look at a pasuk in that way. Well, wait a minute. That's not true. How about this? It says in the Braita, if you're talking about an ir hanidachat, so what's the mitzvah of an ir hanidachat? You take out all of what's there. You take it to the rechov ha'ir. You take it to the city center, and you burn everything that was in that city, right? Listen to this, Braita, and you will see that we take every word seriously. It says, you go ahead, it's kol shlala, tikbots el toch rechova, visarafta be'esh, etc., etc. Now, let me show you that it means literally. What happens if that city does not have a central square? It doesn't have a rechov. So what do you do? Well, ein lo rechov, you cannot turn it into an ir hanidachat, because the pasuk says, take everything to the city center. How literal can you get? And not only that, that's Rabbi Shmuel Shita. Even Rabbi Kivu argues on Rabbi Shmuel. And he says, if there's no city center, build one. Make the piazza disrefa. Let everybody come out there and we'll make a beautiful rechov for it so that we can burn the whole place down. Osin l'arachov, but that means that both of them agree. Ad kan lo pligi, the only machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Akiva is whether you would build a street, a midtown street, or not. Okay, so Rabbi Shmuel says you need to have it there at the onset, otherwise it's not an ir hanidachat. Whereas Rabbi Akiva says, no, you can make it now, a rechov of the ir hashtanami. It's the same thing as if we were there before. But both of them agree it does need to have a city center. Why does it need to have a city center? Obviously, because be'inan krakat ichtiv, everybody takes the pasuk literally. And that is Shmuel. So why are we looking at whether Shmuel didn't say something outrageous? Shmuel said exactly what Rabbi Shmuel holds and what Rabbi Akiva holds. I mean, what's the point? Yes, it's true. However, it is not universally true, because this is the shita that we just quoted of Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva, but we have another Mishnah in Negayim that makes it clear that it's a machlokas, because the Mishnah in the Negayim says, suppose a Mitzora does not have a thumb, or does not have a big toe, or his name is Van Gogh. So what do? He doesn't have an ear that you're supposed to sprinkle this blood on. So what do we do? Well, says the Tanakhama, then there's no way to ever make him tohar. As the Torah said, you have to put the blood on his toe, or you have to put the blood on his ear, his right ear. So what can you do? Rabbi Eliezer says, what do you mean, what can you do? I mean, he's got a place where there used to be. I mean, there's a stump there where he used to have a thumb or he used to have a toe. Put it on there. I mean, no teno mikomo v'yotze. I mean, that didn't say to ask only this way. Rabbi Shimon says, well, put it on his left ear instead of his right ear, or his left toe instead of his right toe. I mean, yeah, the pasuk was just giving illustrations. So you see from here very clearly that a pasuk, according to these shitas, according to Rabbi Eliezer, is not meant to be taken literally. And Rabbi Shimon, it's not meant to be taken literally. And therefore, what we were talking about in Shmuel was in the full awareness of the fact that this is really based on a machlokes tanoim. That's why we were asking from various piskei halachas and different mishnas whether Reb Shmuel is correct in asserting that that is the din halacha l'maisa.